This is Gen Clash, Queer Perspectives on Current Affairs, a Gay 45 European original podcast endorsed by the Vienna Business Agency, the organisation that provides support for founders and companies that grow or settle in Vienna.
Hello from London and Vienna, and welcome to the new episode of Gen Clash. I am Marina Tiberiu, and I'm here with Razvanion.
Hello, hello.
This week, Taylor Abbott, our Gay 45 news editor, left on the table. Greece becomes the first Orthodox country to legalize gay marriage. Right-wing organizations attack new Microsoft artificial intelligence. A brilliant interview with renowned gender theorist Judith Butler in Financial Times. A priest was arrested in Spain for trafficking poppers and Viagra. And finally, we recommend the best films in cinemas to see on a date and watch to watch at home on a date night. Greece recently took the world by storm after the nation's parliament officially passed the bill to legalize gay marriage. Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis expressed that this decision reflects Greece's appreciation of democracy and exemplifies the nation's support of, quote, European values. Whilst protests from right-wing and religious groups took place in the weeks following this announcement, they were largely peaceful. Becoming the first Orthodox Christian country to legalize gay marriage, as well as the 16th of the 27 EU member states to do so, one can wonder if neighboring Christian Orthodox nations such as Cyprus, Bulgaria, and Romania will follow suit.
Of course, it's important for every country to legalize same-sex marriage, but Greece, it's very important because it's an Orthodox country, and Orthodox countries has not moved in these directions, not any of them. And Greece is the first one. And Mirna has more on this topic.
Yeah, I found it quite interesting that the Greek Prime Minister, when he kind of announced this law had come into place, so Kyriakos Mitsotakis, he said that marriage equality in Greece reflects Greece's turn towards European values. And I find it very interesting that LGBT rights are here equated to European values. I don't know what you think about that, Raz.
Of course, if we look from the religious point of view, it's a very important signal because a lot of Orthodox churches in East European countries are affiliated to Greek Orthodox Church. On the other hand, it was expected. I mean, let's not forget the leader of the left-wing party Syriza, Stefanos Kasselakis, is married, I mean, in partnership with Tyler Macbeth. So basically, one of the most preeminent and powerful politicians of Greece right now is openly gay. And that shows Greece was very close to this moment since a long time ago. Besides that, yes, we have an antique Greece where homosexuality was considered a norm. My take on this will be how the Orthodox Church, which opposed, let's say, to the parliament decision, will influence the Bulgaria or Romania, which are Orthodox countries in European Union. Of course, there are Serbia, Russia, Ukraine, Moldavia, but in European Union, we talk about Romania and Bulgaria, which are on the scale of human rights, they are very low. If they will take on this, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, and I mean, the first country I thought of after Greece was Cyprus, being an EU member state and also right next door and also Greek speaking. Also for context, I grew up in Cyprus. I'm also very interested in Cypriot politics. And I mean, only last week, in reaction to the news in Greece, the deputy government spokesperson in Cyprus, Yanis Antoniou, went on record on TV and he said that Cyprus was not ready, or Cypriot society was not ready for marriage equality. And the same thing, I heard the same thing in Romania just a few months ago in December, when the Prime Minister said the same thing, essentially, that it wasn't ready. And I was thinking about this. Is this expression to not be ready for marriage equality, is it a sign of complacency? Is it an empty phrase? Or is there some truth to it? I don't know if you can give me an answer, Rizwan.
It's very complicated to analyze what these people has in mind. I have to underline again, this year it's the most busy electoral year in the history of humankind. It's not only, so everywhere are elections. And especially Romania and Bulgaria, they have four elections in the same time. So now we are not surprised about Bulgaria or, I mean, Romania. Romania, I mean, the prime minister of Romania, it's a former businessman with pretzels. So I'm not expecting from him anything more. But what is interesting is you quoted him a little bit wrongly. He didn't say, he said Romania is not prepared, but also regarding the European Court decision against Romania to respect the marriages which are done in other countries of European Union, he said something which is very interesting. He said it will be not the first time or the last time when Romania will not care about European court decisions. That show us he doesn't really care about a very important institution, which is European court. And for a European country, it's a very interesting declaration of the prime minister. The German press was underlying his declaration. So I'm quite sure LGBT rights are somewhere on the list. But what's happening with Bulgaria and Romania, it's so much, I don't even know how these countries will start to change.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. Going back to what we were talking about in the last episode about how ridiculous the state-sanctioned homophobia in Russia is, I have a similar feeling when I think about Romania, obviously to a different extent. I mean, even when we think about former Europarlamentarian and also coincidentally the owner of one of the biggest football teams in Romania, Gigi Becali, how he went to spray holy water with a group of Orthodox Christians after Pride on the very same streets that the Pride procession in Bucharest had gone down. It's just, it really blows my mind how this can happen in an EU member state. Microsoft Copilot, the new and improved large language model AI assistant, launched on Windows machines in recent weeks. This latest version has advanced in terms of ability to retain pronoun and gender identities of users and assist on LGBT-related matters. This is precisely why it has come under fire from right-wing users.
Indeed, that's interesting to discuss about how AI is perceived from a social or societal point of view. Still, the right wing, they will radically respond to anything. As an example, a Twitter bot made by Elon Musk doesn't respond to questions connected to abortion in the United States, so, which I find it rather disturbing. On the other hand, there is an MIT test, let's say, because they are very scientifically proof tests, which says, for example, ChatGPT, it's more left libertarian, or like Meta AI, former Facebook, it's more right wing. Now the Microsoft Copilot, which I personally use, I think it's correct. Regarding to LGBT, queer, and how response to these things. But it's probably biased by the shareholders and not by ideas or political behavior.
I also wonder whether this incident will change the way that my generation, the Gen Z generation, perceives AI, because I think we tend to be very reticent towards it. And there's this kind of like dystopian doom and gloom that is present online, at least in the circles that I exist in online, with regards to AI. And people are kind of seeing it as what it isn't. They're not really seeing it as a tool for human beings. They're talking about how it's going to take over and all these kind of like crazy conspiracy theories. But I wonder now that it's kind of, it feels like AI is on our side. This is a very like symbolic thing to me.
But you do know when, even if you have been born yet, when we had the first credit cards, people was burning the cards thinking the devil is inside. So these kind of responses are always to the new technology. And I think AI, it's resembling the invention of the print of books by Gutenberg. This is where we are now. It's a fabulous tool. I think people will be reticent to any type of new technology, and generally it's impossible not to be biased. Think about AI like a small child, it will be biased by the parents. And on the other hand, Gen Z will always be reticent to everything, which is actually not a bad thing.
That's true. I think your generation back in the day was probably reticent to new technological developments. However, what surprised me recently as well was the AI ethicist in the Vatican, Paolo Benanti. I can't really see where the overlap between organized religion and technology is, especially in terms of AI. I don't really see why the Vatican decided to do this. Is it a performative move?
I think
is there genuine?
It connects to what we talked before. It's about the shareholders and the church. It's a big shareholder. It's about the money and always being about money. Church will be there. My own curiosity, it's not what a Vatican ethicist will do. I'm quite sure he will do something to find the religious education in the AI, which I hope he will not succeed. But on the other hand, I am very curious how the Orthodox Church will respond and what they will want. So we have a lot of things to wait for and to keep an eye on it like journalists, because otherwise we'll end up with a new AI Bible or with something similar.
Judith Butler's most recent interview, Wonderfully Personal, was published in Financial Times. Butler's seminal text, Gender Trouble, has become the Bible for the current LGBT generation's way of conceptualizing of themselves and the world around them. Butler talks about what pronouns mean now, the current state of the LGBT community in the age of right-wing populism and turf wars, and how we need to rethink activism in the midst of global uncertainty.
It is a quite interesting interview. And of course, you can find a lot of interviews with Judith Butler. But this one we choose because it's in Financial Times. And publishing in Financial Times an interview with Judith Butler, it's not a small deal. On the other hand, yes, Judith Butler is a very important anthropologist. And like Slavoj Žižek or Judith Butler or these kind of academicians, we can talk about them in any way we want today, but we can't go around the importance they had in changing the perspectives in academical world.
What I found most interesting was that this was touched upon in the interview, but then the newest book, the most recent book, is called Who's Afraid of Gender? And it's meant to be accessible for precisely the people who wouldn't generally think about reading Butler with pleasure. So conservative people, people from non-academic backgrounds, non-queer people, and it's that it seems like they're really like aiming the conversation at the groups that they need to convince. And I think that is also kind of shown by the fact that the interview was published in Financial Times. Whilst I don't want to generalize, feels like the Financial Times would have perhaps a slightly more conservative readership than, say, The Guardian.
No, but that's the most important thing, because the readers of Financial Times, it's a different type of reader, and they will read things which probably they never faced before. For example, you remember Judith Butler, for them, our bodies do not exist outside of their interaction. That's something which probably a reader of Financial Times will not think about every day. And also it touched something which is very personal for me, and it's very true. They said gay rights turned to be arguably conservative by expanding marriage. And I quite agree. Starting with having marriage, we become to be more imitating the heterosexual type of life. Also, I am agreeing with them when says I'm still little suspicious of categories. We occupy them, they occupy us, end of quote. Yeah, sometimes things are occupying us instead of we should occupy them.
Yeah, and definitely. And it felt like towards the end of the interview, they were kind of turning towards my generation of queer people as well. I mean, they say, and I quote, identity alone is not a politics. And it feels like when they are talking about the state of politics and right-wing populism in this day and age, they are also, aside from that, criticizing the kind of maybe complacency that Western LGBT communities may have adopted now, this kind of idea that we've achieved our rights, even though we didn't fight for them, and the fight is over, essentially. And it's not at all the case. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the UK right now, what Rishi Sunak is doing to trans people in the UK, there is so much more to fight for. And as soon as one group in the alphabet soup loses some of its rights, it will also affect some of the other groups. Like, I think we should unite, essentially.
It's not only when someone from the alphabet loses, but any human being, only one human being losing their rights, it's radical and important. And, you know, this is why I liked them 25 years ago, and I still like them now. Judith Butter says one thing, the fight will never end, because always we will progress, we will find another thing to fight for, and always we have to pay attention to our society around. You know, it doesn't matter. Some people, even on our website and comments, were naming them in different ways. And some says Judith Butler is a terror supporter, which is completely untrue. But, you know, you can do whatever and name them in any type you want, or Slavoj Žižek or whatever. But I'm quite sure the history will ever mention them for the changes they've done and the perspective they changed. I'm not quite sure Rishi Sunak or his acolytes will be mentioned by history.
A priest in the small town of Don Benito in Spain has been arrested for the suspected sale of powerful aphrodisiac substances. That's a quote from El País. El País claims that the other man arrested with the priest is his partner and that they operated from the house in which they both live. The priest's lawyer denies all of these allegations.
That's a very interesting news. And it's opening a new question for me. What do you think they will do in that small diocese without their main drug dealer?
That's the thing. And also, Viagra is completely legal and sold in pharmacies in Spain. And Poppers is in that like gray zone of where it can maybe sometimes be sold under different names that you kind of find in most of Europe. So you can only wonder what other substances they were trafficking, because there clearly has to be something that the news is not mentioning.
For sure, they are dealing much more. But it's quite interesting, talking about legality, for example, in Berlin, which is very weird. It's now the gay capital of Europe. You can't buy Popper in a sex shop. Of course, in most of the countries in European Union, you can. Now, in Berlin, cannabis became legal. So sometimes I find it very weird. How is to traffic Viagra? I mean, why is it so problematic to procure Viagra that you have to buy from a drug dealer?
Yeah, and I mean, Spain is one of the more progressive countries in Europe in terms of LGBT rights. And yet, in the news, it was being described as a tragedy or as a kind of, it was described as a shameful thing. And I also didn't really understand why people put so much importance over the fact that this priest was, it was supposedly his partner, his romantic love interest, who was trafficking this Viagra with him. It just, it doesn't sit right with me. It feels like mildly homophobic, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's a type of journalist I never condoned with. It's tabloid style. I don't believe you should underline as a journalist the color of skin, sexual orientation, or apartness of a certain community or religious apartness. But this will happen even more amid this media outlets crisis and financial crisis. But on the other hand, we have another question in our hands, and The question is how that small congregation will survive without their day-to-day Viagra dealer. You are a film critic. Also, you study film in Cambridge University, beside being the editor-in-chief of Gay 45. So I will ask you something which is exactly in your garden, let's say. Where should I go? What should I see in the cinema?
Well, I would recommend this time around the new Kristen Stewart film called Love Lies Bleeding, which is coming out in the US on March the 8th and the UK on April 19th of this year. And I'm very, very excited. It is a lesbian thriller released by A24, so indie darlings. And I think it's the first time in quite a while that Kirsten Stewart has been able to play the butch lesbian that she is. And, you know, after years of gracing red carpets and the most amazing suits, she gets to kind of transfer that energy into a character. And I'm very, very excited for it, safe to say. But Raz, I wanted to know, what film did you like when you were my age?
Oh, there's a long line of films I liked. But in the 90s specifically, I think one of I loved very much and I recommend you to see, and you can find it everywhere. It's My Own Private Idaho. It's a movie by Gus Van Sant, the famous and beloved Gus Van Sant, extraordinary director. And I think it's a very interesting perspective on the queer life, and also with two beloved stars, River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves, on their 18, 20 years old. So you will see them in the prime of their career. Unfortunately, River Phoenix, the career ended there because he died. So yeah, My Own Private Idaho, I would recommend to see. It's a very nice movie. And if you have a beloved one, take him or her or them with you and see it, because it deserves more attention these days by your generation. So, until next time.
This was Gen Clash from London and Vienna with Maruna Tiberio and Rizvani On, a production of Gay 45, a smart indie queer magazine. As usual, Gen Clash is fed by the amazing news editor Taylor Abbott and produced by the creative audio engineer Emil Dragomirescu with the fabulous original music created by GS Bumps. For an insight into where we select the topics discussed, subscribe to our The Nine newsletter. Link in the description of the episode. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, click on the follow button. For our podcast listeners, we have a special gift, a gift of knowledge. For a limited time, the subscriptions on gay45.com are 80% less. Do not miss it. Go to gay45.com for more details and to read our wealth of articles. Send your suggestions to gay45.com/podcast. We are eager to hear your ideas and proposals. That's all for now. Spread the word about us. Until next time.